to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase.
Hakuna Matata ain't no passing craze.
It means no worries for the rest of your days. It's our problem-free philosophy. Hakuna Matata.
Hello and welcome to show 121 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. This is Jimmy here, and this week I have the great honor of having Peter Alden on with me. Peter just recently released a CD called Kingdom Classics, performed by Peter Alden, and it's a great CD. I got a chance to listen, been listening to it for about a week now, and I hope you guys get a chance to listen to it too. And Peter, welcome.
Thanks, Jimmy. Nice to be here.
So before we get to the CD, which I definitely obviously would want to cover because it's fantastic, and I can tell you any Disney fan would enjoy listening to some of those really good songs done in a different way. I like to ask our guests that come on to the show, first of all, since this is your first time with us, what makes Peter Alden a Disney nerd, and or what started that for you?
Well, I had the privilege of getting to go to Walt Disney World pretty close to when it first opened back in the early 1970s. And my grandparents took my brother and I, and we stayed at the Polynesian, which at the time, the Polynesian and the Contemporary were the only two hotels that were on Disney property. So that in itself was cool. And then back at in that time, you could only get Disney merchandise at Disney. So if you came to school the next day with a Disney shirt or hat or the ears, you were like, it was like the president came to school, and you were immediately surrounded by everybody who wanted to know about the park and what it was and what was there. And so that was really kind of neat, because we got there really, really early on, and when they still had the tickets for the rides, the A, B, C, D, E tickets. So that was neat. I got to experience the park that way before they did away, and you could just go straight to the ride.
And did you go straight? I mean, at that point, were you hooked, or you know, was it maybe a subsequent visit that? Because so just to give you a little on for me. I mean, I went a couple times as a kid, and I'm from the greater New Orleans area, so it was a big deal for us to go. I didn't live in New Orleans, but a small town. It was a big deal. And we went, I think, twice when I was a kid, and maybe once when I was a teenager. But I really didn't get the bug. And I would say I was always a Disney fan, but I really didn't get the bug until I went as an adult. Me and my wife, well, we went on our honeymoon in 2000, but we went on an adult trip, just me and her, in 2006. And that's when I really, I guess with the advent of the with the internet and everything else and all the different ways to research and get involved in Disney communities is when I really, really got the bug.
Well, you know, it's interesting because they say, oh, everybody lives in Central Florida, it's Mickey 24/7, and it's not really a big deal for people who live in Florida to go to Mickey to see Mickey because they're right there. And I don't know. I guess you could say that was true, but when I went there, that wasn't true, because Disney was it.
Sure.
There, you know, there was no Universal Studios. I think the only other theme park, I believe, was Cypress Gardens. I'm not sure even SeaWorld opened that early, but I could be wrong about that. But yeah, as you say, I went and I liked it as a kid, and it certainly was a big deal. Actually, I remember the first time we were there, we rode Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, and that I remember that ride gave me nightmares.
Oh wow!
But going into the tunnel with the train, that sticks out so vividly in my mind. But yeah, we did go off and on through the years. Down here, when I was in high school, they used to have what they called grad night out at the Magic Kingdom, and they had bands out there, and graduating kids that signed up could go and spend the evening out at the Magic Kingdom. It was closed for the kids who were there for grad night. So that was fun. So that was a different way for me to experience it with just my friends as opposed to being there with my family. Now I was there with my friends, and so it was a completely different experience that way. And then I liked it enough to want to get a job there, and working there was great. It really was.
I've met a few people who have either worked there or did college, you know, done college program there or whatever, and I've never heard anybody say that they didn't enjoy it. Everybody I've talked to said, you know, they highly recommend that if they could, you know, they would go back. And if I've heard many of them say that if you could work there and support a family, that they would go work there as a profession, you know, which
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, plenty of people have, and there are times that I think, wow, why did I leave? Cause I just really had a great time there. And you always kind of look back and think, wow, what if I stayed, what direction would I have gone in?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I was changing directions from the time I got hired to by the end when I left, what I was doing was completely different. So, you know, you just kind of think about, well, if I'd stayed for the rest of my career, you know, what kind of things could I have done? So, yeah, but I really enjoyed my time there. I really did.
So you worked at Disney as a cast member. How did that start, and what did you do, and what was your progression there until you decided to move on?
Well, I remember, this was, again, I look upon my different experiences with Disney and in ways that are unique, because when I applied, the casting building was not what it is now. It was way, way, way in the back of these orange groves. And I think it was like, it was almost like a double wide trailer from what I remember. But it was way, you had to drive through all these back roads to get there. And I remember I filled out the application I was right out of college. So I thought, well, I could do security, I could do operations, you know, and attractions. So I filled out for a couple of different things, and they called me back for attractions and operations. So that's where I started. Actually, I was supposed to start there, but they were overloaded. So they took a lot of us, and they gave us the option, okay, you can wait for a few months until the positions actually open, or we can reassign you somewhere else in the park until that happens. So I did that because I was right out of college and I needed to work. Sure. So I worked at, they had me at the Diamond Horseshoe Review as a server.
Okay.
Which I was absolutely horrible at. I still don't understand how someone can screw up just delivering pre-made sandwiches so slowly, but I was horrible. So I was very, very happy when operations called and said, yeah, okay.
As a Disney fan, I mean, I got to figure, you know, working in attractions and operations is probably like the goal, right?
It was. And I was fortunate enough to even get my plum job which was at the Jungle Cruise.
Oh,
that's where I really wanted to go. That's what attracted me to operations and attractions was Jungle Cruise, because I liked the fact that they had, you know, that comedy spiel, and it was just always one of the more popular attractions. And so when I got the Jungle Cruise, I was extremely happy.
Yeah, probably one of the you know, least mundane jobs and operations is got to be Jungle Cruise, because you can make it a little bit different every trip. Doesn't have to always be the same, you know.
Yes.
So, you know, as opposed to something like, you know, what was it, like Living in the Land at Epcot, you would have...
Or the Tiki Tiki Tiki.
Right, it's the same spiel over and over, the same exact way with the Jungle Cruise. You know, it is. It's like a comedy show. So, depending on your audience, you could maybe interact a little bit different. And, you know, so that, I get it. That makes complete sense.
Yeah.
So... How long did you do that for?
Let's see. Well, also when I was there, and Jungle Cruise is in Adventureland, and a lot of times they could loan you out to other Adventureland attractions if they were shorthanded.
Okay.
So I did some fill-in shifts at Pirates. And I worked at Davy Crockett's Canoes. I don't even know if that's still there anymore. It might not even be there. But
no, it's not.
The canoes were the only free-floating boats in the lagoon there. Because I know the keel boats were on a track, I believe.
I believe so.
And I know the paddle boat was. Well, the keel boats might be free-floating too.
I'm not sure. That's cool, though, because I don't think I've ever, you know, and I've never seen the Davy Crockett boat, so they're definitely not there now.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and looks, I mean, that's cool, going in the morning and getting dressed like Davy Crockett was pretty cool.
Sure, so. absolutely. And so you stayed there until how long? How long did you work for Disney?
Well, I stayed at the Magic Kingdom until they opened the Disney MGM Studios. And they hired from the outside, but before they even hired from the outside, they took a lot of us who were excelling in our positions and moved us over to the Disney MGM Studios to make sure that they had a good crew over there to open that park. And then I stayed there another 3 or 4 years. So all in all, I think I was at Disney almost 8 years.
Nice. Okay. So that's a good while. So
yeah.
And what did you do over at Studios?
Over there, I started out at the backstage studio tour, driving the trams and giving the spiel. Then I did the special effects tour and hosted the water show over there.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
That was great fun. That was great fun. And then I went over to the Rocketeer Gallery that was open right after the movie The Rocketeer came out. It was right across from Muppets.
Okay.
And they had all the props in there from the movie. And I was one of the guys that walked around dressed like the Rocketeer, so that was fun.
That's really cool. You were the Rocketeer, which is pretty cool. Not everyone can say that. And I listened to one of your interviews before coming on, and I was hearing that you're a huge Marvel fan. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
I am too. So.
Excellent.
Yes, you're okay with, because, you know, not everybody is okay with Disney's ventures into Marvel and Star Wars, and some Disney purists are like, oh no, it's not really Disney, it's, which my argument is, by the way, well, is Finding Nemo Disney, because it hadn't been that long since they purchased Pixar.
Right, exactly. I think it's exciting. I think Disney is certainly going to pump some new life into those franchises. And look, I have to tell you, the latest Star Wars film, as far as that goes, that's the first time since Return of the Jedi that I sat watching a Star Wars film and I thought to myself, this feels like a Star Wars film.
You're right.
The last three were, did they, you just, I don't know how to describe it when I say feels like a Star Wars film. There's just, there was something about those films that you felt a certain way when you watch them. And this one I felt like it was watching a Star Wars film. So if they continue to take Star Wars in that direction, I'm absolutely great with that.
It's going
to
be incredible too, because it's they're doing so much more than just the next, you know, trilogy. They're going off in different directions with spinoffs and side stories and, you know, backstories and stuff like that too. So that's,
yeah. Well, I think, yeah, there's all kinds of directions.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Star Wars universe is so big and expands. There's so many different characters that they can just dig into a little bit. So I'm definitely looking forward to that as well. And look what they've done with Marvel.
I love what they've done with Marvel.
Yeah. And
sorry, I interrupted.
No, you're good. I know some of the Marvel storylines are not, you know, some of the comic book purists and, you know, the story's changed a little bit and some people don't like that. But, you know, I think they're working toward a goal and that they have to twist these stories a little bit for the movies.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting when you say purist, because there are so many things that I really would regard myself as a purist in. But then, you know, as you say, you have to adapt certain things. So it's hard to be an absolute purist, because they're changing the comics to attract a different audience. I understand that. So
yeah, it's definitely more trying to go more mainstream. But, you know, I mean, if you take a lot of these characters, even in the comic books, there's been so many storylines written that they get very twisted. You know, I mean, there's been so many iterations of Captain America. That story has gone so many different ways depending on who's writing. I'm talking about just in the comic books.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's just so many different ways he's portrayed. It's like, at some point, it's, you know, you got to give them a little bit of their artistic freedom, or, you know, to kind of make these movies to appeal to the largest audience possible.
Well, honestly, the last Captain, the Winter Soldier, the last Captain America,
fantastic, my favorite overall,
was so much more like, you know, one of those old spy films.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
By far my favorite Marvel movie so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think the guy, Chris Evans, I can't think of anybody else who could be Captain America. He's perfect. He's absolutely perfect for Captain America.
There's a rumor I've seen floating around that he will die in Civil War.
Well, he does. Captain America dies in the comics, but then he comes to life. So, you know, it's...
But you could see, you could see after this one, you could see Bucky Barnes carrying the shield, so...
Yeah, well, and I think in the comics, the Falcon is actually Captain America.
Bucky
now,
Barnes,
so.
Well, now he is. Yeah, Falcon is. But at one point, it was Bucky Barnes, and then Steve Rogers comes back and... But he never becomes. I think at some point he did become Captain America again. But he kind of gave the nod to Bucky to continue doing it. So, and then you're right. After that, even the Falcon becomes Captain.
I think the only thing that you have to watch for in movies is obviously when you talk about purists, people also become attached to the actor or actress playing that character.
Sure. No doubt.
And, I mean, honestly, just look at the trouble you've had doing Superman without Christopher Reeve.
Right, absolutely. I did like the kind of direction they did. They almost went like a Star Wars direction, where they kind of picked somebody who was relatively unknown.
Yeah.
Rather than...
Which I have no problem
well,
with.
Well, I think it's great, rather than, you know, like all the Batman films they did with, you know, Val Kilmer and Michael Keaton and George Clooney, picking these people who were already famous actors and trying to shove them in that role. I like the idea of finding somebody relatively unknown. That way you don't have them preconceived notions about them. They're not, you don't typecast them.
Well, and you also don't carry into the film the people who don't like that actor. I think that's the problem. Obviously, the problem the new film is going to have is the people that don't like the certain
sure.
actor. So.
That's definitely true. All right, now that we've gone completely off track.
People are going to be like, does this have anything to do?
Does this have anything to do with Disney or music? So you're a musician by trade.
Yes.
Did that come from Disney?
No.
No? Okay.
It came from my both of my parents. My mother was an elementary music teacher.
Okay.
And my father was a choir director for many years, and then when we moved to Gainesville, he took a job as the choir director at University of Florida and rose to be the chair of the department.
Nice.
And then he also did. Interestingly enough, he was in charge of choirs at the Chautauqua Institute, which is what the Disney Institute is based off of.
Okay.
Up in New York, so he was head of choirs there for a while. So they were very musical, and had my brother and I both take piano lessons and get involved in music. And I went to Florida Southern here in Lakeland, and I was fortunate enough that when I was there back in the 80s, we had some you know wonderful vocal teachers that were there. So
okay, and when did it become a job, I guess is the question. You do this is your career period, or is this kind of something you do in addition to a career?
This is something that I would say that is mostly my main career, probably about 85%. I pick up some other things just to kind of help supplement during the slower times, but this is the mainstay of what I do. Yeah, so
awesome. Okay, and let's talk about the album. Why Kingdom Classics? What was going through your head with the idea of this? And by the way, it's fantastic. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I love the music of the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
To begin with. And that's a lot of what I do with my band. We do a lot of 50s, 60s, 70s. And I was just thinking of ways to go in a different direction. And we came upon this idea of doing an album of Disney songs because, again, the people who love Disney and love the Disney music, there's something about Disney music, and people just sing along with it.
Sure.
They just do. And so we wanted to do something that people could sing along with, but yet would be a little bit different than they'd heard it before. I know recently they came out with an album that was a lot of modern artists would contribute songs to it, and I listened to it, and we were kind of hearing that, while the kids of today really liked it because it sounded like today's music, a lot of the Disney fans were having trouble finding the Disney sound. It was all very modern, but they couldn't hear the Disney melody,
sure,
which they wanted to hear. So we thought, okay, well, we can do something like that where we can take some of these songs, do them in our style, but yet keep them pretty faithful. Getting back to being a purist, pretty faithful to the original idea or concept. So when we picked songs, we really did listen to say, okay, really wouldn't take too much to turn this into this kind of a melody or a beat.
Gotcha. So some of them you probably discarded because you felt like, you know what, we can't do this one without really just changing it completely, which was going against what you were trying to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. yeah, there were several songs that I had in the original list that I really wanted to do because I know people like them, but we just couldn't figure out a way to arrange them in our style that wouldn't take away from what the song was.
What's your favorite one?
On the album?
Yeah, on the album. What's your favorite? What's your personal favorite track?
My personal favorite is I Just Can't Wait to Be King. I thought that one came out beautifully.
I really enjoyed Hakuna Matata.
Okay.
I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was very funny.
Great.
Who does the voices? So obviously, I'm assuming you're doing Timon.
Yes.
Are you doing Pumbaa too?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I didn't know if you laid that like on a different track and you were like completely different because it didn't sound like you, but I was like, well, maybe he did. I don't know.
No, it's interesting. My producer, Terry, did the voice of that. He helped me co-produce, and he's also a guitar player in the band. And when we were originally going to do it, he said, you got to have somebody else do this voice. Because otherwise people's going to think it's just you. Because they're going to say, oh, he's just singing as Pumbaa.
Right.
So, and it's interesting you should bring that up because somebody did bring it up and wanted to know how I was able to get into such a different register.
Well, it's because it's completely different. Pumbaa. Yeah, it's completely different. So I'm like, hey. I would have.
He tried so much to not sound like me, and somebody thought he sounded like me.
I would have guessed it was a different person, but I would have been impressed if it had been you doing both parts.
No, that was Terry Fulwiger, my producer, doing
it. Made me giggle. I mean, just like it should. You know what I mean? I mean, that song should make you giggle.
Good.
So
good.
It's really good. I really enjoyed it. What was what do you think the toughest one to do was?
I can tell you without a doubt, the absolute toughest one for us to do was A Dream Is a Wish Your Heart Makes.
Oh, I bet. That probably makes sense.
It's the arrangement of it is, I tell you, Disney can make things sound so easy and so simple. And when you get into the meat of the arrangement, it was just so difficult to find a way to do it that fit.
Yeah.
And honestly, we didn't come up with that final version until the night before I had to try to get the list into the production company to say that these songs were going to be on. And we were going to have to take it off because we could not find the thing. Either I didn't like the way it was going or Terry didn't like the way it was going. And that was absolutely by far the most difficult one to do. And I got to tell you, it really, I'm pleasantly surprised and pleased with how it did turn out.
It came out very well, but knowing the original song, I could understand why that would be especially tough to do and change the style that's going to suit you guys. It kind of makes sense, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we tried it with strings and it sounded too much like the original. Then we take stuff out and it didn't sound full enough. And so we were just at our wit's end as trying to figure out what to do, because Disney fans had come up to me, some Disney people had come up to me when they heard that we were going to do this, and were just giving me constant directions. Listen, don't mess around with this one. Don't mess around with that. Right. So I was hearing all these voices in my head. Don't screw up the song from Pinocchio. Right.
So interesting you bring up Pinocchio because, you know, I don't remember this song. Me and we were talking about the upcoming interview about a week ago, I guess. Me and one of my co-hosts, Sam, were just sitting on Skype, and I had forwarded him the CD because we didn't know who was going to be coming on to do the interview. And he's like, he hadn't heard it either. Pinocchio's Boogie. I've never heard that one.
Well, that song and Rock Around the Mouse are both songs that came off of a Disney album, back in the early 1980s.
Okay, so it's not in the movie.
No, those were not movie songs. But that was an album, and actually I had it as an 8-track, believe it or not.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome.
But though that was an album that was songs about Disney and Mickey that were set in a 50s, 60s style.
Gotcha.
And Little Richard actually sang on one of the songs.
That's awesome. Okay.
But when we were originally thinking of the concept, we had a lot to pick from because we picked from movies, we picked from that other Disney album. We looked at songs from theme parks.
Sure.
So there's just a ton of different things that we were considering doing, would maybe do in the future. Some people have asked us to do some different things, so we'll see how those work out.
So, the cover, whoever did that, I mean, they knocked it out the park.
Yes, that is our graphic designer, Chris France, and she just did absolutely phenomenal
Chris,
job.
I'm telling you, it is, the concept, just the whole idea of the picture came out great. They knocked that one out the park, for sure.
Yeah, her company, Designs on a Roll, has been working with us for a while, and I wanted to make it a subtle indication as to what it was, because obviously I can't use Mickey Mouse or anything like that on the. So I wanted to do it kind of subtly, but yet people are going to know what it is. And we gave that suggestion to her, thinking this is going to look silly when we get it back. I don't know why we even thought about that. She sent it back to us, and we were just, that's it. That's the one we've got to use.
It is, so. Yeah, it really could. So that brings up another question, and believe me, it's just me and Sam when we were talking. How do you produce an album like this as far as the rights and stuff? Are these songs just as long as you give credit? Is that the deal?
No, you have to go through an agency. There's a big agency out in New York called the Harry Fox Agency.
Okay.
And that's the company that licenses all the music through ASCAP and BMI and CSAC and some of the other music publishing houses. And you basically, they've got it set up now where you can do everything online. You find the song. And most of the time, the Harry Fox Agency owns 100% of the publishing rights.
Gotcha.
Sometimes they own 85% and you have to go to another publisher to get the other 10% or whatever.
Right.
Thankfully they owned all the percentages to everything that we wanted to do. And you let them know how many copies you're getting made. And there are different types of licenses for how many copies you're getting made. If you're going to have it in a television show or in a movie,
gotcha.
There's a different type of license for digital downloading because those are unlimited. You can't really control how many times somebody downloads something. So it's an unlimited digital download license you have to get. So we're working on that right now. So right now all we have are physical copies because that's the type of licensing we have right now.
Maybe one day see it in a Disney park.
That I don't know. It would certainly be wonderful.
Huh?
I would love to perform at a Disney park and have those available. Or even yeah, that would be a great thing to have happen. I don't know how or when it would, but
you never know. I mean, we've had on the show. Steve Barrett as a guest, who does the Hidden Mickey books.
Uh-huh.
And that was just a solo, just a book that he decided to do. And now you can pretty much pick it up at any gift store in Walt Disney World. So you never know.
Yeah. That would be great. That would be absolutely fantastic with me.
So how does somebody get a copy of the CD now?
Well, right now we have, If you get in touch with us at Peter Alden Fans on Facebook,
okay.
You get us your address. We can send it out that way. There's also a store, TV Collectibles, here in Central Florida, and we have, you can get copies there at the store. Okay. But they also have an online an online store, tdcollectibles.net.
tdcollectibles.net. Okay.
And on that, they have an eBay store, and they have the category for the CD, so you can purchase it online from tdcollectibles.net as well.
Okay.
We're also in the process of getting it over to CD Baby.
Okay. Will we be seeing a Kingdom Classics 2?
Well, I would certainly love to do a Kingdom Classics 2. We've already had several suggestions. There were some songs that didn't make this one that I would love to do. And if this one does well, and it seems to be, everybody seems to really be enjoying it. So it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility. I have several more songs that I think we could do.
Fantastic. I would be... Definitely look forward to that. How can everybody who listens to the Disney Nerds podcast get in touch or follow you? I know you brought up Peter Alden fans on Facebook. What about Twitter and Instagram and all those wonderful places?
Yeah, on Twitter, it's Peter Alden Teen.
Okay.
And we have a website, peteraldenentertainment.com.
Fantastic. Peter, thank you so much for coming on the Disney Nerds podcast. We truly appreciate it and hope you huge, huge success. Hopefully once I go to Disney and I see it sitting on a shelf in like the Magic Kingdom, I'll say, well, maybe I'm going to have to get Peter back on since I brought it up first.
So. Yes, thank you. Jimmy, it was great. I appreciate you having me on. And I'll tell you what, I will, if I see it out at the Magic Kingdom, I will give you all the credit all right. for it.
Well, look, one of my co-hosts, Ed, every time he like makes some type of just off the wall prediction, it seems to come to fruition for whatever reason. So we always make a joke that Disney's listening to us.
There you go.
So, you know, hey, who knows? Weird things have happened, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks a lot, and talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you, Jimmy.
All right.
Knock, knock, knock. Don't knock the rock now. Wood, wood, wood. Do what you should. Don't you forget, oh, just be like Geppetto and knock, knock, knock on wood. Well, knock, knock, knock. Don't knock the rock now. Wood, wood, wood. Do what you should. Don't you forget, oh, be like Geppetto and knock, knock, knock on wood, yeah. Knock on wood. Knock, knock. Everybody, knock on wood.